Good afternoon. My name is Walter Stadnicek, and I am an alcoholic. It's good to be here and good to be sober. My home group is called Up the Creek, located in District 55, South Edmonton, Alberta, which is part of Area 78, Alberta Northwest Territories. And Edmonton is located about 7-hour drive north of the U.S.-Canada border. And if you don't know where Montana is, then talk to your sponsor. I'm currently serving as the Area 78 immediate past delegate. Is this too loud? No, it sounds very echoey. I'm currently serving as the Area 78 as immediate past delegate, which is a rotated into position. As an area officer, I have voting privileges and sit on the Area Finance Committee. My sobriety date is October 2nd, 1986. Thank you. You can thank Alcoholics Anonymous for that. And I'd like to thank Eva for the loving invitation to share on the topic AA's history of love and service. And I'd also like to thank those in the audience that made it part of their schedule to be here to support me. So thank you for that. Gotta breathe. I started drinking alcoholically in high school. I was a fall-down, pass-out drunk from the get-go, and it didn't get any better for the next 20 years. You'd think someone with a full deck would say to himself, maybe I shouldn't be drinking this stuff. But feeling separated from, with a sense that no one understood me and everyone was better than me, alcohol gave me the companionship I craved for. Unable to be honest, and I didn't even try to cope with life on life's terms, alcohol became my friend. 20 years of drifting from one job to another, one relationship to another, I was totally consumed by when I could have a drink, how much it would cost, how many drinks I should have, where I could get the money, or who could I impose for a drink. With so much going on, how could I deal with anything else? I was powerless over alcohol, and the strange thing is I couldn't and didn't see my own illness. My life had become completely unmanageable. I had became filled with resentment, fear, shame, and guilt. I was resigned to the fact that I was a drunk, and this was as good as it was going to get. But even with all the insanity, the lies, the immoral behavior, all I needed was another drink, and relief came. I could put it behind me and not worry about the destruction I caused my family, my friends, and myself. But the length of relief was getting shorter and shorter until it wasn't working anymore. I was drinking to oblivion. The good times were far between. My relationship with my family was almost non-existent, and the drunks that I hung with didn't want me around anymore. I don't know why at this particular time, but the grace of my higher power came into me. Looking back, I know that I had a spiritual experience. I hit my bottom sitting in my armchair. 20 years of drowning my feelings and hiding in a bottle came pouring out of me. I sat there crying uncontrollably. I fell to my knees asking help from a God, a higher power that I had turned my back on 20 years before. A voice in my mind, clear as a bell, said, Walter, you should go to treatment. And I did. That is where I first saw and read the AA's 12 Steps and 12 Traditions in a local treatment center. I had a sense deep down inside of me, buried under the rubble of my life, that these words were something that could help me. I like the phrase I hear in our service structure, let's be friendly with our friends. And for me, that includes treatment centers. I'm grateful that we live in a society that has these types of facilities. But like many of us coming out of treatment, thinking that I was cured, I never went to any AA meetings. I had one more bender a year later before I finally stayed and came to be here in front of you 28 years later to speak on the topic AA's history of love and service. This is part of Dr. Bob's talk at the first international convention in Cleveland, July 30th, 1950. And I quote, There are two or three things that flashed into my mind on which it would be fitting to lay a little emphasis. One is the simplicity of our program. Let's not louse it up all up with Freudian complexes and things that are interesting to the scientific mind, but have very little to do with our actual AA work. Our steps, when simmered down to the last, resolve themselves into two words, love and service. We understand what love is, and we understand what service is. So let's bear those two things in mind. End quote. Okay then, let's bear those two things in mind. A definition I found and I personally relate to for love is, to love is to recognize yourself in another. To recognize yourself in another. In sobriety, I came to believe that we're all connected spiritually and each part of the whole. But for me, it's when that new person walks through the door of our meeting room or when I visit someone in a treatment or correction facility, I instantly recognize myself. I identify with that person. I can see, feel, and understand what he or she is going through. I empathize with a spiritual person wanting to get better. And like I used to do, looking for spiritual leaf in a bottle. The love of one alcoholic talking to another, the essence of what our fellowship is about. That is what happened to me when I walked into my first meeting at the campus group. I arrived there a broken man, spiritually, mentally, and physically sick, beaten down by alcohol. I sat at the back, slung low in my chair, wondering what the hell you were talking about. You talked of powerlessness, coming to believe, inventories, shortcomings, and making amends. I didn't understand any of it. I just wanted to know how to not to drink as much as I did. What I do remember is the laughter, the smiles, the gentleness and clarity of your eyes. You fanned a small flame of light deep inside of me, and it stirred a feeling I couldn't recognize. I couldn't recognize then, but now I understand it as the feeling of hope. You saw yourself in me, and you loved me when I couldn't love myself. At the end of the same talk, Dr. Bob says, and I quote, "And one more thing. None of us would be here today if somebody hadn't taken time to explain things to us, to give us a little pat on the back, to take us to a meeting or two, to have done numerous little kind and thoughtful acts in our behalf. So let us never get the degree of smug complacency that we're not willing to extend or attempt to that help which has been so beneficial to us, to our less fortunate brothers." End quote. It took me another half year of meetings and confused listening before I heard someone else tell my story and the miracle happened. I might have heard the same message many times, but at that particular time, I suddenly realized the fellowship of AA could help me. My mind opened to what you had to offer, and that was I had to do the steps to get better and not get better to do the steps. I joined a home group, got a sponsor, and started working through the steps, and through that process, it happened. I recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. I was freely given the gift of sobriety. Then you told me that in order to keep this gift, I had to give it away. I started on my service journey without even knowing it had begun. Bill writes in AA Service Manual, page S1, under the heading AA's Legacy of Service, and I quote, "Our 12th step, carrying the message, is the basic service of AA, of the AA Fellowship gives. This is our principal aim and our main reason for existence. Therefore, AA is more than a set of principles. It is a society of alcoholics in action. We must carry the message, else we ourselves can wither, and those who haven't been given the truth may die. Hence, an AA service is anything whatever that helps us to reach a fellow sufferer, ranging all the way from the 12th step itself to a 10-cent phone call and a cup of coffee, and to AA's General Service Office for national and international action. The sum total of all these services is our third legacy of service, including meetings, places, hospital, cooperation, and intergroup offices. They mean pamphlets, books, good publicity of almost every description. They call for committees, delegates, trustees, and conferences. And not to be forgotten, they need voluntarily money, contributions from within the fellowship. End quote. AA may have started when the great friend of Alcoholics Anonymous, Dr. Silkworth, had a talk with Bill days after Bill's spiritual experience in Town Hospital in New York. Bill was talking to the local alkies about finding sobriety through a spiritual experience like he had, but failing completely at it. This is part of the conversation that they had, and it's from a Language of the Heart, chapter Language of the Heart in the Grapevine, July 1960. And Dr. Silkworth says, "Quit preaching, quit harping on your old spiritual experience, your odd spiritual experience. Tell your own story, then pour into those drunks how medically hopeless alcoholism is. Soften them up first, then maybe they will buy what you really have to say. You've got the cart before the horse." And further down in the article, Bill talks, and he says, "My meeting with Dr. Bob in Akron was my first successful report with another alcoholic. And here was the foundation of AA's 12th step of recovery, the step in which we carry the message." End quote. Dr. Bob died in 1950, and this is a talk he gave in Detroit previous to that, and it's from the Grapevine, 1973, it was published. "I think the kind of service that really counts is giving of yourself, and that almost invariably requires effort and time. It isn't a matter of just putting a little quiet money in the dish. That's needed, but it isn't giving much of the average individual in days like these, when most people get along fairly well. I don't believe that type of giving would ever keep anyone sober. But giving of your own effort and strength and time is quite a different matter. And I think that is what Bill learned in New York, and I didn't learn in Akron until we met." End quote. The history of love and service, of carrying the message of sobriety or being of service, had begun. Person to person, hand to hand, heart to heart, through 80 years to where we are today. Passed on to me by my sponsor and the passion I heard from those that were there before me. The passion of giving back, of carrying the message. Service started for me probably like everyone else in my home group. Tradition 5 says, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. And Bill wrote in the 12 and 12 on Tradition 5, "The unique ability of each AA to identify himself with and bring recovery to the newcomer in no way depends upon his learning, his eloquence, or any special individual skills. The only thing that matters is that he is an alcoholic who has found the key to sobriety. These legacies of suffering and of recovery are easily passed among alcoholics one to another. This is our gift from God, and his bestowal upon others like us is the one aim that today animates AAs all around the globe." What a great message for someone like me who thought he wasn't good enough or smart enough to carry our message of sobriety. I became involved in our local intergroup where I learned to work with others and be a part of. Always trying to learn how to best to be the best of service. There's a fly flitting around here. Trying to grow through my accomplishments and mistakes. One day the group needed a general service rep and I raised my hand and got elected. I attended my first assembly and someone there took me under their wing and walked with me through the weekend. And that woman is here. It's Barb from my home group back then. It opened my eyes to the enormity of our fellowship and I was filled with gratitude for the opportunity to be there. When there were positions that needed to be filled, I just kept raising my hand and allowing my name to stand. Serving Area 78 as a district committee member, area corrections officer, area chair, registrar, treasurer, alternate delegate, then representing Area 78 as the Panel 62 delegate to the General Service Conference. And I still stand here today with this small feeling that I haven't given back enough to the fellowship that saved my life. AA's history of love and service is the history of all the pioneers that blazed the trail before us to make the fellowship what it is now. But AA's history continues on today, from the home group, the district, area, the General Service Conference, and all of us here attending the 80th International Happy, Joyous, and Free, one alcoholic reaching out to another. We are collectively contributing to AA's history of love and service. Thank you all for my sobriety.
Thank you so much for that, Walter. Beautiful story, and I know, you basically put it in as simple terms as we need to put it in, that AA is described in two words, and that's love and service. So thank you for sharing that. And would you please help us welcome Robin, and Robin is from New Mexico.
Hi, I'm Robin, I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank Walter. He gave the talk I would have prepared today. It's an honor and a privilege to be able to be of service to Alcoholics Anonymous and to be here today. I really want to thank you all for showing up. It would be a really boring meeting if it was just the three of us and our closest friends. I have a sobriety date. It's December 1st, 1992. I have a home group. It's called Vaya Con Dios. I live in Elephant Butte, New Mexico, and my home group meets Wednesdays and Saturdays in a town called Truth or Consequences. I have a sponsor, and that all three of those things make me a member in good standing of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm so grateful to be sober, and really, welcome to Atlanta. If you're not from the United States, welcome to the United States. It's really, this is my third international convention in attendance, I think. And it's always a privilege and an honor to be at an international convention. If there is a heaven, which I believe there is today, I hope it's just like this. We all walk around with badges, we get to meet each other, we get to greet each other, and most people smile. It's really a wonderful thing. So really early into my sobriety, I got involved in general service. There was a group conscience that was being taken at our district level, and I think it had to do something about whether or not they were going to continue to sell chips and medallions at central office. And I had mentioned to a couple people that when we take the group conscience, we might want to make sure that people are only talking about their own personal experience at their home group, because otherwise people could jump from meeting to meeting to meeting and keep taking the same group conscience, and that would kind of mess things up. And I believe that one of the people that I said that to was Eva Sanchez, and she pointed at me and said, "You're a GSR." So I didn't even know what a GSR was at the time. So it was really, I've been fortunate to have really, really wonderful examples of experience, strength, and hope that walked before me in this fellowship and have taught me things, how to carry a message a little bit better, a little bit softer, a little bit more loving. I think what I recall from those days is that Eva would simply hold her hands out and say, "Here's what we know about things." And I would take that information and try to shove it down people's throats. So I learned that I can soften things up a little bit better, and I can slow down a little bit more and just be able to try to share an experience, strength, and hope, and not tell people how to do it. I was really crazy in early sobriety. I'm still pretty nuts. So learning has been a key ingredient for this for me. As I was preparing for this, I thought about Ebby, and I thought about him coming to see Bill that day. And I have a really decent imagination, and what I imagined that meeting to have been like was that Ebby was sober and Bill was shocked at that. And I think that that's really where love and service began. Ebby had a great desire to carry a message to Bill W. And I think the same kind of inspiration happened when Bill went to go meet Dr. Bob. It was out of a desperation and out of a desire to help himself. And I think that that helps us every time that we have a desire to help ourselves and we're in that motivated state of mind of caring just a teeny bit for the still suffering alcoholic. My personal experience is that whenever I have had the opportunity to be of service to Alcoholics Anonymous, it's always been a situation where if I can just think of the person that's still out there dying from the same disease that I have and remember what it was like for me and try to carry something for them, I get out of self just a teeny tiny bit, and in that out of self, I get free from my alcoholism. And in that, it all comes back to where I get the gift of sobriety. The other person, I don't know if they ever get the gift of sobriety. I've learned that whenever I'm trying to do a 12-step call, the other person is on step one and I'm on step 12. I have a few things to share today that I didn't have when I walked in these rooms. And for that, I'm so very grateful to have been given those gifts and given those examples and shown a little bit better the pathway towards how to help somebody. When I got here, I couldn't help myself. I couldn't help anybody. I've had the experience of, I got sober in Santa Barbara, California. I was part of an area called Area 5 at the time, which Southern California was all like part of Area 5. In the time that I've been sober, I watched that area split off. It's now Area 93 and Area 5. At the time that that area split, they elected me as chairperson for the literature committee. And I believe that one of the people responsible for that election is still in this room today. And I was really grateful to be able to be of service in that way. It's true that no matter how much I keep trying to give back to this organization, I can never give back what's been given to me, because every time I try to give back something, I get a little bit more. I get a little bit weller. And I think that the importance of that has to do with all of us trying to give back. It's not just one person. It takes 2 million of us in the United States and Canada to be able to keep this organization going the way that it's supposed to be going, which is, to me, God's will. That's my personal history of love and service. I don't really have a lot to say today. I decided last year to go back to school, and the last 6 weeks I've spent in classes, and I took a final on Wednesday and showed up here on Wednesday night. So I didn't have a whole lot of time to prepare for this. I just know that in trying to give back that we gain. And in that, I'm truly grateful to have been part of Alcoholics Anonymous, and thank you very much for my sobriety.
Thank you very much, Robin. Just share a little on my experience when I was fairly new in a service position at the general service level. I heard from the best of the best, really, and some of the ideas that I, that some of the suggestions that I received when it comes to service is that God does not call the qualified. God qualifies those that are called. And I know for myself, every service position that I've taken on, I've had a tremendous amount of fear and felt to be completely unqualified. But through the example and the help of others, I've been able to do what has been required of me, and it's you know that saying has proved true, you know, that that God qualifies those that are called. And the only two questions, and Robin, you know, you shared on this as far as you know, being of service to others, I think that there's really only two questions that we need to ask ourselves. And the first one is, you know, am I willing? And the second, do I have the time? And, you know, if we can answer to the affirmative on both of those questions, it's quite clear that that we're there to serve. So, and thankfully in AA, there is a job for everyone. You know, from the home group level right up to serving in the general service conference. So I'm thankful for all of the opportunity that I've been given to grow personally in my journey through AA. It's been an adventure. And if you would please help us welcome Ray. Ray is from Omaha, Nebraska. Thank you, Ray.
Thank you. Before we get going, I'd like to do a little roll call. Go Big Red. All right, Nebraska's in the house, and thanks for the rest of you for showing up, too. My name is Ray Petty, and I am an alcoholic. The grace of God, good sponsorship, and fellowship like of people like you, I haven't found it necessary to take a drink since October 15th of 2000. I want to start off by thanking Bill, our delegate, for nominating me to do this. I think I'm thankful. Could be resentful in about 20 minutes, I don't know. But it is an absolute honor to be here. I say it's an honor to speak anytime to speak before a room full of alcoholics, and that's true. But today is amazing. This is my first international, and I'm speaking at it. And I have no idea how that happened. You know, I certainly qualify for a chair in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'll spare you the gory details of a lot of that because of the topic that we're talking about, and that is AA's history of love and service. The service part I can speak on fairly well. The love part I'm learning, and I'll get to that. But I currently serve as the Area 41 chairman, which is the state of Nebraska. Surprise. The path of service for me is really how I got here. I was 7 years sober, and I worked through the steps, and things happened so fast for me, and my life changed, and it was wonderful. And then, because I'm an egomaniac, I figured I got this. And I did nothing in Alcoholics Anonymous for years. And I experienced sobriety. And, you know, when you're not having fun in sobriety, it's a rough road. And I'm very grateful that I didn't go back out during that point in time in my life. I was 7 years sober, and I was going to one of my home groups, and after the meeting, a guy that would become my sponsor and I were having a conversation about what is your home group, was the question. And I said, well, this one and then the Saturday morning group. And he says, you know, a guy named Tom Iveser a long time ago said that your home group's where you hold a service position. So knowing that piece of information, where's your home group? And I said, I don't have a home group. That was Thursday. Saturday, when I went to the other meeting that I would have called my home group, the GSR comes in and says, because of work requirements, I have to step down. is there any volunteers? And I'm like, are you kidding me? I mean, it's only been 48 hours. So I volunteer, and I know nothing about what a GSR is, and I fulfilled that role and ultimately went to district meeting, became alternate DCM, went out to Area 41, and all that that entails. And, you know, the first time I went to an area meeting, I was crying and moaning all the way out, and I couldn't be shut up all the way back. And, you know, AA is AA is AA. I'm sure AA is what it is everywhere from every person in this room. But the level of commitment that these people had for AA was different than the meetings that I went to and the groups that I attended. And that really hooked me in, and it really saved my life because I got back into recovery at that point. And it was through service. I mean, I've held positions that I didn't want. Every time I rotated out of the position that I didn't want, I found that I grew more than I could have imagined. I will always sell myself short if I think I should get what I want. You know, and I'm grateful that I, to this point, have been dumb enough to listen and smart enough to follow through with what my sponsor tells me. You know, we had in my opinion, a significant event at the last area meeting that we were at, and it was unbelievable to be a part of that. I didn't have anything to do with the implementation. That came from the assembly. But to be a part of something that, frankly, was highly disputed. There was good points from both sides. And to watch the fellowship work was amazing to me. This is an emotional thing for me. I am the emotional one of my in our relationship. My wife sits back there. She's just stone cold. But I'm the emotional one. You know, so in preparation for this, I did some reading, and I actually was reading Alcoholics Anonymous Comes of Age on the way out on the flight. And what I found out was that 60 years ago today, the founders turned over the fellowship to us today in St. Louis. And here I get to speak at the International Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous today. I was like, whoa, this isn't just any other meeting. You know, but it's amazing. And, you know, Walter talked a lot about the history, you know, and quoted some things that Dr. Bob said. And I'm going to read some things that Bill said. And, you know, because it's amazing that all of us are here today when you think about all of the battles, and there were battles, people. This isn't about arguing about coffee in your home group. There were battles about keeping Alcoholics Anonymous going in those early days. You know, and we're a group of problem people. I don't think that it was any different back then. They were problem people. You know, and able to forge out the solutions and then be of service to others and to hold this thing, hold this whole thing together. It's amazing to me when I look at it like that. You know, so on pages 9 and 10, I'm going to read, and this isn't actually what Bob said. This is kind of an interpretation from Bill. But never would Dr. Bob have us think him a saint or a superman, nor would he have us praise him or grieve his passing. We can almost hear him saying to us, "Seems to me you folks are making heavy going. I'm not to be taken so seriously as all that. I was only a first link in the chain of providential circumstances, which is called AA. By grace and good fortune, my link did not break, though my faults and failures often might have brought on that unhappy result. I was just another alcoholic trying to get along under the grace of God. Forget me, but go you and do likewise. Add your own link to our chain. With God's help, forge that chain well and truly." It was in this manner, if not in these exact words, that Dr. Bob actually did estimate himself and counsel us. That's service. This is one of the founders of this program. And yet, the humility and the ability to be humble enough to realize that he's just a cog in the wheel amazes me. I am arrogant, and I think I know a lot. And here's this guy that put this program together that saved my life and continues to over and over again. And he's humble enough to realize that he's just another link in the chain. You know, I read stuff like that and it's like, whew, ego check. Time to reevaluate. Maybe you're thinking more about me and less about thee. That happens sadly more than I'd like it to, but... So from the service piece, it literally is the general service of Alcoholics Anonymous that has led me back into the primary purpose of one alcoholic sitting across the table working with another alcoholic. That's what it's all about. You know, and I've heard people talk about, all you guys do at areas, fight over dotted I's and crossed T's, and at times we do. That's just fact. But the passion there and the care of the people that are involved in the process, and a huge lesson learned for me through this process, is the ability to disagree without being disagreeable. I was a man that if you disagreed with me, you have no value to me and you're out. It doesn't make any difference who you are. That's hard living. It's hard to make friends. It's hard to build relationships. You know, I learned that, oh, I need to be of value to you for this relationship to grow? That sucks. Who wants to do that? But these are these little anomalies and the paradoxes of things that I didn't know when I got here. And you people taught me this. You know? The other part of this conversation is love. And I wish, you know, I heard it said early on in the program that love is an action word. If you love somebody, show them, don't tell them. And that made a lot of intellectual sense to me. But I wasn't real good about that. I'd just soon tell you and then hope you believe me. Than to have to actually put myself out there and love somebody. You know, I was 5 years sober, and it's funny how it goes hand in hand. I was dry, but I was sober. I was 5 years sober. I still didn't have a whole lot of like for anybody. And I didn't know if that was going to come. And it's actually through, it's not a reinvention, but for me it's a reinvigoration of the program of one alcoholic sitting across the table from another. And the investment of my time into you, that has made all the difference for me. I can stand before you today and say that I do have a genuine love for my fellows. And it doesn't matter if we agree or disagree, or if we're on one side of the conversation or not, because we have a common solution. And that is the thing that, you know, any power that I have in this program is from my experience. Because my experience is something that no matter what, no one can take from me. So if my experience is a positive one, I can show you how I did that. there's value in that. You know why I struggled with working with new guys when I was dry? Because what in God's green earth am I going to tell them of value? Because I didn't even know what it was for me. You know, my sponsor puts on a big book study on Thursday, and I've been going to that continuously for 3 years now. And it's a different meeting than most or all big book studies I've ever been to. But it is really the one that has shined the light on the doctor's opinion and, you know, the problem and the solution and the ability to take someone from the dark to the light. That's strong. I love that. I got guys I've sponsored who I've been able to watch go from the dark to the light. And I don't know if there's much better than that, except watching them take another guy and go from the dark to the light and have questions come back to me that were asked of me from the same person. It doesn't get any better than that. And all of these things have allowed me to love. You know, sometimes I don't love the problem, but that doesn't mean I don't love the person. That's new information to me. Sadly, I say these things out loud, and it sure seems logical and reasonable for a smart guy like me. I should know this, but I don't, because I get in my own way an awful lot. And it's only through the work of this program that I get to do things like this, that I get to come to Atlanta, Georgia, and rub elbows with 80 to 100,000 people just like me. No better, no worse, just like me. You know, unconditional love is something probably that I still have to strive for. I wish I could tell you, if you have this disease, I love you. I'd really like to tell you that, but I don't know that it would be true. I still have opinions, and it gets in my way. And ultimately, I am an alcoholic. I'll always be an alcoholic, and this is a process. You know. But Bill was, and this is, I was reading about the, it's the 20th anniversary convention in St. Louis in 1955. And so Bill was talking about asking all these people what they thought about the convention and what they thought about AA and AA's future and all of this. And he kind of compiled it into a guy that he calls Mr. Grassroots. And it's really a compilation of all the things that that he brought in through those conversations. And so part of that, I won't read the whole thing because it's about 3.5 pages, but part of it, it says, on Sunday morning, the last day of the convention, I found those 12 traditions still on my mind. Each of them I saw is an exercise in humility that can guard us in everyday AA affairs and protect us from ourselves. If AA were really guided by the 12 traditions, we would not possibly be split apart by politics, religion, money, or any of the old time, or any old timers, excuse me, or by any old timers who might take a notion to be big shots. With none of us throwing our weight around in public, nobody could possibly exploit AA for personal advantage, that is sure. For the first time, I saw AA's anonymity for what it really was, what it really is. It isn't just something to save us from alcoholic shame and stigma. Its deeper purpose is actually to give those fool egos of ours from running hog wild after money and public fame at AA's expense. It really means personal and group sacrifice for the benefit of all AA. Right then, I resolved to learn our 12 traditions by heart, just as I had learned the 12 steps. If every AA did the same thing and really soaked up these principles, we drunks could hang together forever. I watched the big hall of the Kiel Auditorium filled up. Thousands of my newfound friends were pouring in for that final wind-up. I caught sight of Father Ed as he eased himself into a seat across the aisle. He was a wonderful reminder of our morning session of the spiritual part of the program. In that session, something happened to me that I'll never forget. I'd always carried a certain amount of prejudice against churches and clergymen and their concepts of God. Like many AAs, my ideas about God were mighty vague. But as these two spoke, it loomed upon me that most of the AA spiritual principles had come to us through clergymen. Without clergymen, AA would have never started in the first place. While I had been nursing my grudges against religion, Father Ed and Dr. Sam had been going all out for us. This was a brand new revelation. Suddenly, I realized it was high time I began to love them, even as they had loved me and the rest of my kind. When I knew that I could now do this, I commenced to feel warm clear through. The conviction spread in me that love is a mighty personal thing. Then came the feeling that my Creator really did know and love me, so I could now begin to love Him too. This was one of the best things that happened to me in St. Louis, and there must have been lots of others who had the same experience. That's kind of what happened to me. I didn't learn to love you people because I wanted to. I learned to love you people through the actions that initially I took, and then I got to watch in others. That's how the process of love has worked for me personally. And it's been a great ride to this point. You know, my first sponsor was from Alabama, and he kind of talks like y'all from down here. And he just said, man, it'll just get better and better. And I've carried that with me for 15 years. Because every time I start to wonder, God, this is pretty good. How much better can it get? I don't know. But I'm sure hoping to find out. As long as I continue to do the things in here, I got a shot. It doesn't say that I've guaranteed I have a shot. And I know that I have a shot because I've been able to experience this growth through the love and service of AA. You know, I'm going to close with, sadly, it's an outside issue, but I'll bring it back. So before you get ready to throw stones, realize that there's a purpose to this. You know, in our country in the last few weeks, there's been some controversial decisions that have caused people on both sides of the issue happiness or grief. And that's fine. That's the way of the world. I'm so grateful that in Alcoholics Anonymous, because we are problem people and we like to express our opinions and we like to get in there and fight for what we believe and all of that. But I'm so grateful that we all have a common solution in which we can all agree. Because all that stuff matters none when you're sitting across the table from another alcoholic, presenting the message of hope and recovery, of love and service that each of us have by being here. Thank you.